This is Radio Influence.
I got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow. He's quick as a midget. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome into the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, and momentarily we'll be joined by co-host Daniel Galvan as we're going to look back at what happened this past Sunday in St. Louis at UFC Fight Night 124. Plus, we are going to preview this weekend's MMA, of course, on Saturday, UFC 220. And Bellator 192. Plus, you're going to hear my conversations that I had with Michael Chandler and Aaron Pico. Both those fighters, of course, fight on Saturday night at Bellator 192. And you're also going to hear my conversation with Casey Kinney. Of course, you may remember him from his fights on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. He's going to be fighting on Friday night at LFA 31. But Daniel, I'll tell you what, we're recording this podcast here on Tuesday afternoon. I can't wait for Saturday to get here.
Simply put, Jason, this is going to be one of the best weekends in MMA this entire year. I hope to God it's not the greatest, because this isn't deserving of being the greatest. But without a doubt, this has got to be a top 5, 6, 7 weekend, because the UFC has an amazing main event. Bellator has quite a few fights I'm looking forward to. To me, I'm just really excited to sit down and watch this. Now, I tell you what, I might be four fights into a fight pass prelim or something and begin to regret the amount of MMA I've consumed this weekend. But this, to me, is one of the biggest main events we'll get out of the UFC this year. And this, to me, for Bellator, represents like the start over point. It's almost like Scott Coker has had a mulligan for like however many years he's been a part of the promotion. But this, to me, represents do or die for Bellator when it just comes to actually mattering in the MMA landscape.
And it's one of the best fight cards Bellator under Scott Coker has ever put on. When you look at the quality of fights that are on that fight card, I mean, to me, it's just, and of course, as we get into those fights, we're going to talk about our top five fights of the weekend, but I think Bellator has done an excellent job of putting together a very nice five fight main card. And of course, you look at the UFC, you have your two title fights. After that, it's this drop back, but there still are some quality fights a part of that fight card. Of course, we'll get into that here in a little bit, but first off, we got to talk about what happened last weekend. UFC Fight Night 124, of course, headlined by Jeremy Stephens, getting a TKO victory in the second round over Duho Choi. Also on that main card, you had Jessica Rose Clark get a decision win over Paige VanZant. Kamaru Usman with a decision win over Emil Meek, and Darren Elkins with a submission win over Michael Johnson. But, you know, really, Daniel, when we talk about breaking down this fight card, we got to go back to the two fights that this fight card lost. Of course, Zach Cummings has an incident where his fight gets canceled after injuring himself. Dana White, after this fight card was over, was like, you know, Zach's walking around, he wants to get a fight, but I'm like, no, man, you need to rest your head a little bit. And you know, reportedly his CAT scan came back good. But, of course, yeah, the big one was Uriah Hall dropping off this fight card against Vitor Belfort. And Daniel, I want to play a comment here from Dana White. This was after a fight was over, as he was talking about the incident with Uriah Hall.
I have a very long relationship with Uriah. I like him very much personally. But the guys at the PI, the UFC PI, said he's the most, you know, what's the word? He's the most... He doesn't take it serious. He doesn't take his training serious. He doesn't do what anybody tells him. He does his own thing. A week before the fight, he went to L.A. and was hanging out in L.A. in clubs and stuff. So, not good. So I'm gonna talk to him. He texts me tonight. He's back at his room. You know, obviously, you know, he's not good. And if you don't cut weight the right way and you don't do what you're supposed to do, this is what happens.
And Daniel, very interesting comments there from UFC President Dana White. And obviously, this has once again led the discussion on weight cutting in MMA. you know, I know there's a lot of people out there say, hey, they want to play in the early weigh-ins. And you know, I've said that, you know, I'd like to see them move back the early weigh-ins, maybe, you know, two or three additional hours, maybe instead of having it at 9 a.m. local time, you have them at noon. But if what Dana White is saying is true about, you know, being in the clubs a week out before the fight and what the people at the PI think of Uriah Hall, man, that's some damaging comments, you know, from the UFC president.
Man, you know, I tell you what, dude, Dana White is unlike any like leader in any sport I think we will ever see ever. Can you imagine like Adam Sofer talking about how, yeah, Chris Paul was a DNP last night because, well, he was out on the strip partying last night. I know this guy, but he's got a big time problem with nightlife. Like, I don't think we will ever see somebody almost like it's like Dana White is like the, I don't even know, man, like the Craigslist of sports commissioners. He just airs out all of the dirty laundry. Like, we will never get someone that is this, I guess you could say, politically incorrect to be a leader, other than the leader of the free world. But, wow, I just want to take a moment and really grasp that, Jason, because as long as you covered this sport, you will not find a leader. I mean, listen to all the stuff Scott Coker's doing. I mean, look at the difference. Now, I don't want to give Dana too much credit, Jason, because this is also really messed up, I think, that he completely throws one of his employees under the bus. And also, we don't know if he's 100% right. I think it's safe to assume he's correct, because why else would he slander someone like this? Like, why would he do that? I assume he's correct, but we don't know if it's true, and that's like a really damaging thing. So I kind of got sidetracked. What's the question? It's like Uriah Hall, should Uriah Hall fight at 205 or get his – this whole thing really did a 362, right? Because it started off where I was scared for Uriah Hall because the reports were that he suffered a seizure or fainted. And it's like, I'm concerned for this man. And now it's like turned around to where he's become the villain.
Well, I think ultimately, you know, when we talk about weight cutting, it is are you trying to make a weight that is just not healthy for you? You know, next week on the podcast, I'm going to have an interview with Frank Camacho, who fights at UFC on Fox 27 next Saturday night. And his fight against Drew Dober is at welterweight because the commission said, we're not licensing you or Drew Dober at 155 pounds because we feel it's not the weight class you should be fighting in. And, you know, you'll hear what Frank had to say, which essentially, you know, really has no issues with it. But it leads to a bigger discussion of, you know, when you look at what California is doing with the California state with their 10-point plan when it comes to weight cutting. You look at a guy like Uriah Hall. If he were to try to fight in the state of California, maybe they don't license him at 185 pounds. But on the other side of the story that I feel like is a story that's gotten a little talk about, but not a lot of talk about, is the fact of Vitor Belfort made weight. He did his job on Saturday. He should be getting paid.
Yeah, I thought that was so for the UFC. See, there was something they could be proud of, and we'll get to that next, I think. But something they can kind of be disgusted in is, dude, it's like that's criminal, man. It really is criminal that Vitor Belfort was not paid. Because the way I look at it is like this. The fight camp and the weight cut is a part of Vitor's job, and he should be paid for it. It's kind of like if me and you got – let's just say me and you got an ESPN show and they called it like MMA Report Van Talk or something. All right. And we had, you know, we worked all week long for our episode. Those checks better clear for every day we worked, even if our show never airs, you know?
Yeah.
He worked and the show didn't air and it was independent of what he did, but he literally worked and performed a service. Like So, yeah, there's that problem. But shouldn't a promotion like the UFC that I would assume is really just raking, really like doing really well when it comes to getting money out of the fighters' pockets and not having a fair deal, shouldn't they look to put themselves in the best light from a PR standpoint? What does that paycheck matter to them? Even give them just the show money.
I think the other side of the story is it should be a lesson to all fighters and all managers that you need to have in, whether it's in your regular UFC, you know, fighter agreement or that bout agreement, that, hey, if you make weight and for whatever reason your opponent doesn't show up on fight night, you still get paid. Yeah. I mean, you know, Dana was very much, you know, out there about, hey, you know, we offered him a fight, you know, for last Sunday. We offered him fight for UFC 220. He turned them both down. And I don't blame Vitor for that, because why should Vitor just, you know, take an opponent on 24 hours notice?
Dude, a single fight can define a person. There is so much on the line. And to just kind of be like haphazard with how you decide when you enter the cage in the UFC is just, that's a dangerous proposition, especially for a fighter who is as old as Vitor is, has received as much damage. The UFC really, to me, should not have put Vitor in this position. It's a bad look for the UFC. It's not a necessary thing for them to do. They're not going to sink or swim if they don't get a Vitor Belfort fight in the month of January. So I just think it's awful, but I also think it's stupid by the UFC not to pay him, because to me it's a bad look from a public relations standpoint. And that's not even getting into the human aspect. I mean, we were talking before the show about how Jimmy Rivera didn't get his money, and you mentioned, you know, he didn't do the weigh-in, right? So I guess there's a point there, but I just think if a guy makes weight, at the very least, like, he should get his show money. And if I'm Vitor Belfort, I'm not going to take a fight against Carl Roberson. I have one fight left in my career.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to be an interesting fight.
When you look at that fight card, I'm guessing they offer him Thiago Alves.
That's what I was thinking with the Zach Cummins injury.
I mean, that's the only opponent that would, you know, because there was no other middleweight on this fight card. I mean, were they trying to feed Kamaru Usman to Vitor Belfort? Like, you know, if I'm Vitor, that's not a fight you want to sign up for. But, you know, one of the questions that we did get, or this is more of a comment from JoeDaddy85 on Twitter. He says, another year means more fighter bashing in 2018. Only one card into 2018. When will Dana ever learn that cutting the legs from under his fighters is the dumbest thing you can do as a promoter? And his examples were Uriah Hall, Vitor Belfort, and Kamaru Usman. We'll get into Usman here momentarily. I mean, look, this is what Dana White does. And Dana White's not changing. Let's not act like all of a sudden the calendar turns over to 2018 and Dana White is going to change how he does things. I mean, this is who Dana White is.
Yeah, man. And he is so much like, okay, 2018, 2017, 2016. The one thing you don't have in our culture is like nuance or whatever. You're either the villain or the hero. It's real white and black. To me, Dana is a very nuanced person, because there are reasons to dislike the man. And, you know, there are things he does where he doesn't really have empathy for others. But there's cool things to like about him, great things he's done for the sport. And there is something very much where he comes across like just your buddy who, you know, people talk differently when they're a public figure and when they're within their friend groups. We're completely different people. He manages to be the guy within the friend group that kind of rubs you the wrong way sometimes, but he just happens to be the most prominent guy. So I've kind of come to a place where I think it's important not to be overly dramatic one way or the other on how we kind of how we judge Dana's legacy. Uh-huh. Because he offered a lot, Jason. But the laundry list, you go all the way back to, remember when I can't even remember what he called Loretta Hunt back then. Whatever, he used a bad slur. I feel like he said
Wasn't it the C word? Was it the C word?
It may have been the C word. I know he got in trouble for saying homophobic slurs. He's got in trouble for saying everything you're not supposed to say, and justifiably so. Like, dude, the peaks, like if we did a PowerPoint presentation on the peaks and valleys of Dana White, man. That would be a long presentation, a long one.
Let's see here. I'm looking at it. Looks like he called her a dumb bee. One of the things. But I feel like he said something else about her.
Yeah, I feel like it was worse than that. I mean, that is bad. That's really bad. That's obviously bad.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. obviously awful. Awful.
Yeah.
But look, Dana White's not changed the way he is. I mean, he had the comments about Kamaru Usman, and you know, look, that's one of those fights where. This is, and you know, tell me whether you agree or not, where at least 50% of your audience is either going to love that fight and go, man, what a dominating performance by Kamaru Usman, or 50% is going to go, man, that fight sucked.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's largely the people who watch the fight in groups. I think the people who watch the fight in groups, fights like that don't tend to be they don't tend to play to the room, because then you can find yourself in a conversation and get lost in it. Like, fights that play to the room are the hardcore back and forth fights, and also the quick finishes. Fights like this, where it's kind of the same thing over and over again, and it is quite dominating, kind of gets lost. But I won't criticize him as much, just because, like, to me, that's what I thought of Kamaru starting off in his career, Jason. And he's then showed in some of his more recent fights, maybe not this one, that he has the potential for just blockbuster fights, blockbuster action. I think he just fought a guy who was not able to stop Kamaru from doing what he wanted to do. And for Usman, to me, the recipe for making an interesting Kamaru Usman fight for not half your audience but all of it is stacking up the competition. This man needs a legit top eight opponent at the very, like, maybe a top four guy, honestly. Maybe he needs Kobe Covington, whoever that is.
Look, that's a fight to make.
But that one could also be boring. Like, that could be the most boring fight out of all of them. But maybe the wrestling cancels out. The trash talk would be good enough. But yeah, I think you're right, too. I think that's the fight to make.
If Usman was healthy, and by his 30% comment, obviously he was not healthy heading into that one.
Yeah.
I would have approached him and said, hey, you want to headline the UFC on Fox Card Orlando? You and Kobe Covington, you train, you know, literally, you know, miles away from each other. It's in the state of Florida, you know, and obviously that fight card needs a main event, which is, it's kind of crazy to me as just, you know, look, and yes, I'm going to be there, so I want to see the best fights possible since I'm going to be in attendance. But it's one of those things that it's really kind of crazy that you're, 45 days or so away from that fight and you have no main event?
Yeah, man. Cards on February 24th. This is, you know, Wednesday is January 17th. Like, dude, aren't tickets on sale?
Oh yeah, they've been on sale for nearly a week now. I my gut feeling is Jessica Andrade's Tisha Torres is going to be the main event of that fight card, and I just, you know.
And what's the co-main event? Henan Burrell?
Yeah.
Sarah.
I mean, there's some nice fights on that card, yeah. But it
there's not for, a, this is a Fox card, Jason.
Exactly. For a Fox card, I feel like it's missing like that, you know, because I really get the sense that Fox cards now are number one contender fights, essentially, you know, mm-hmm. that fighter is going to win a fight. I mean, look, you can make the case Andrade and Torres is that fight potentially, but man, that fight card's missing some name value. And, but it's Covington Usman is a fight to make. Look, it was a dominating performance by Kamaru Usman, but it's also a performance that isn't going to win him over new fans.
Yeah, it isn't. It's just a steady progression. But to me, the best case scenario for Usman heading into this fight was just going to be a dominant finish, because Emil Meek wasn't an opponent. He's an opponent whose name value is so much less than his actual talent value. I mean, this is a real tough fighter at welterweight. But it's not like Usman was going to be able to vault up the ranks with a dominant knockout over Emil Meek. So this fight heading into it, you kind of got the sense that Kamaru had a lot to lose in this one, and he lost nothing. So I think that's a win in his book. And if they can turn around and put that fight on Fox, I think that's certainly something they need to do, just because as they kind of do their TV deal, they're going to want as strong as ratings as possible. And I tell you what, the what they got going now, I mean, in my opinion, the UFC Fight Night card we just saw had bigger name value, if you include the Uriah Hall Vitor Belfort fight, than the one that they got in Orlando right now.
Yeah. I mean, and look, we're 20 minutes in this podcast. We haven't even mentioned about Jeremy Stephens, Duho Choi. I thought Jeremy looked very good. It took him, and he noted this after the fight was over, that it literally took, you know, him going back to the corner after the first round to hear his coach Eric Del Fiero make some, you know, adjustments he needed made. And then I did see some people, not many, but some people thought that maybe Keith Peterson jumped in too quickly. I had no problems with the stoppage.
Yeah, to me that was a clear stoppage. I mean, Stevens landed a big right early, followed up with another, and to me Choi was out. A stoppage not there, the fight would have been stopped 3 seconds later after he landed another one. I love I love the strike to a grounded opponent. That to me is always fantastic. Man, I was expecting a barn burner, and round two was pretty exciting, but this was not a barn burner. This was Jeremy Stephens separating himself from Duho Choi.
Yeah.
Choi did a lot of nice things, but it just felt like Stevens was at a really entirely different level than him stand-up wise.
Yeah, and I did like Jeremy Stevens' call out of Brian Ortega. I mean, look, if you're going to call somebody out, call somebody who's right there at the top. I mean, you know, Jeremy knows he's not getting a title matchup in his next fight. You know, do I think that's a fight the UFC goes with? No. I mean, they want to do Ortega, Emmett. That was a fight that was offered to both fighters as the main event for UFC on Fox in Orlando. Emmett accepted the fight. Emmett came out publicly and said that Ortega turned down the fight, and it sounds like Ortega is trying to sit back and wait for a title shot. I don't know if that's necessarily the best thought process for him. Maybe he's hoping maybe Frankie Edgar doesn't make it to March, March 2nd, March 3rd, wherever. I think it's March 3rd, UFC 222. But I do like it. By the way, did you see Jeremy Stephens' post-fight interview on the post-fight show?
No, what did he say?
Karen Bryant asked him about the Conor McGregor comment of, who the F are you? How do you ask that question? He basically, you know, I forget what the answer was, but I'm sitting there, I'm watching it going, why are you asking that question?
Yeah. Remember that time Conor McGregor talked to you? What was that like?
I mean, like the guy just went out there and had a highlight reel knockout, and that's what you're asking him about? Like, come on.
Yeah. He's not going to set up a fight with Conor, you know. that's not on the horizon. Yeah, that's just stupid. And, man, I feel bad for Choi because, like, not only does he have a performance like this against a tough fighter in Stevens, but now he's got to look towards the Korean thing, or he's got to go, like, serve in the military. Like, that's just a bummer. But if there's any sense of, like, positivity, I tell you what, his fellow countryman, Kyung Ho Kong, returned from his deal, his service deal. Like, he last fought in 2014, and he looked pretty good. I mean, he kind of got roughed up on the feet a bit, or was from strikes from Guido Canetti, but his triangle choke submission was super slick. And, you know, if Choi has any kind of positive light going in, I think we may get a fight out of him before he leaves. But it appeared as though Kong wasn't necessarily the worst thing in the world to happen to Kong.
That is the one fight on this card I did not watch live. That was because I had Fox on watching the end of the Viking Saints game. And someone who has worked on an NFL broadcast for the last 15 years, I've seen a lot of things happen. Never saw anything like that. And then, of course, turned over and rewinded back and saw what Kung Ho Kong did. But, yeah, great win by him.
That was nuts.
Oh, God.
Nuts, bro. That was absolutely nuts.
Yeah. Probably never see anything like that ever again. Kudos to the DB for talking to the media after that, too, man. I think no one would have blamed him for not talking to the media. And, man, that's kudos to him, you know.
You talk about embarrassing moments. Like, that's like if, Jason, if tonight you wake up and you're just covered in poop. You just poop the bed. And then all of a sudden there's media, like, asking you questions about it, you know. Like, you don't want to talk to the media. Like, you got to shower. Same thing.
Yeah, kudos to him. In terms of other things that happened in this car that I want to briefly mention here, Jessica Rose Clark, a win over Paige Van Zandt, clear win, no questions about it. Paige breaks her arm in the first round. I know a lot of people were, you know, kind of saying, why would the corner send her out there? And I know her coaches already come out and done an interview. And I was thinking about this kind of from both sides. When you see, you know, obviously the x-ray of her arm, I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, definitely can see why people would say, hey, the corner shouldn't let her go out there. But then I remember, what happens when a fighter breaks his hand and he tells his corner that?
Yeah. Or, I mean, you kind of move around the body and it's like some body parts, it's okay. Like, obviously you break your nose, who cares? You break your hand, I feel like I have more apprehension to a fighter fighting with a broken arm than a broken hand. Even though you literally can't use the weapon, you know, you're literally handicapped.
She still, she did still throw it a couple of times, though.
She won round three. Like, she won the third round of the fight with a broken arm. Like, I can't criticize the corner for not putting her in. I will say, if I was fighting, had I broken or fractured my arm, I would be out of there in a heartbeat. So Paige is tough. She didn't look super great, though. It was kind of a disappointing performance, but Jesus, I can't even imagine that. But that was kind of a step backwards for Paige Van Zandt, where it's like the next thing for her may just be the WWE.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder there. I do want to mention about this card, Taron Elkins. He was getting lit up in the first round, and I'm like, oh, man, Michael Johnson is just piecing him apart. And then, of course, second round submission come. He's now another win for him. That is six in a row. And when you look at Taron Elkins in the UFC, his losses are to Charles Oliveira, Chad Mendes, Jeremy Stevens, and Hakurin Diaz. He's not lost a fight since the end of 2014.
Dude, I tell you what. Whoever says, like, so-and-so is an underrated fighter, ladies and gentlemen, there is not a more underrated fighter than Taron Elkins. Like, there is just, you can't top it. Because no one cares about Taron Elkins. The UFC doesn't. They always bury him. And he's going to have to win 14 in a row to get a title shot. But he's really freaking good. And that was just such a bad opponent for Michael Johnson to start off his featherweight career. Like, I feel bad for Michael Johnson, Jason. The fact that he has kind of lost so much in a row, he moves down to featherweight. Who's his opponent? Someone as good as Taron Elkins. And then the fight happens. The dude looks great in the first round, only to get tapped out in the second round. I feel bad for a lot of people. I feel bad for Zach Cummins. Felt bad for Paige Van Zandt. Felt bad for Duho Choi, but I feel bad for Michael Johnson maybe the most out of anybody on this card.
And you got to wonder, with Michael Johnson, the run he's been on, does he get another fight in the UFC?
Absolutely. I think he does, because look at what he showed in the first round against a fighter as talented as Taron Elkins. Despite his losses, Jason, I think Bellator would pick him up in a heartbeat. And you begin to look at some of the moves Bellator would make. If you're the UFC, you see that if we don't re-sign this guy, Bellator will use them in a heartbeat, then I think you have value in just keeping him. But I just think he's really good, Jason. And I want to see him at featherweight against a guy not as good as Taron Elkins.
1-5 in his last six fights, but here are the losses. Benil Dariush, Nate Diaz, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Justin Gaethje, Taron Elkins.
Oh my gosh. That's a
murderer's row. I mean, you talk about Benil Dariush, you know, lower top 15 guy. Nate Diaz, obviously, we know what he can do. Khabib, you know, top of the division. Justin Gaethje, top five lightweight. And now Taron Elkins, who, you know, I mean, look, he's approaching top five guy there at 145 pounds. So, I mean, I would agree with you. I do think he probably does get another fight, especially the case you put out there. But you have to imagine that if he loses that next fight, I can't see the UFC holding on to him at that point.
Yeah. Who stood out to you on the prelims?
The prelims, as I just had erased the
fight card. I'm sorry. Down.
But let me pull back up here. I'll have it here momentarily.
My bad. I'll give you my two stars of the prelims, and I'll leave one off for you because, you know, I'm not going to take it all. But I'll go with two female fighters. Irene Aldana, to me, looked really good. She's a very exciting fighter to watch at bantamweight. Personally, she's one of my favorite fighters at bantamweight just because of her stand-up style, and she really controlled the entire fight, aside from a few moments when Talisa Bernardo used her grappling. And Jessica Ai got a big win, Jason, at flyweight against a really tough opponent in Kalinja Fadia. And I will say this much. Jessica Ai, I don't really know if she knows where she's going with her promos and her post-fight interviews, but I do believe Jessica Ai is a very good post-fight interview person. Like, it's not ripped with the bow tie. You're always scared she's going to say something. She's going to cuss for sure. But she's got personality to her.
Good thing that fight wasn't on FS1.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? The hardest working man, it would have been the person who's in charge of whatever, taking out the
censor button, yeah.
The censor button, yeah. But I will say, watching her do a promo, I think she has notable Felice Herrig type potential in that division.
I don't know.
And she's probably going to win enough.
And by the way, speaking of Felice Herrig, I don't know if you saw this, reportedly going to fight Karolina Kolbakevich in April.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that's a disservice to Felice because, like, she's really upgraded her game. Did you pull it up? Is there anything else I missed?
I think Polo Reyes, the knockout he had over Matt Frivola.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
Matt was just rushing right into him. I mean,
he did straight Don Fry. What was that, man? It's 2018. I don't hate it, but that was stupid.
You gotta fight smarter than that.
You do. I just want to make a mention of the Matt Hughes deal. I thought that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that moment.
Yeah, cool moment.
I don't know what his name is. You got to know his name. The guy, he's always on Twitter. He's like in the production truck.
I don't know. Zach. Why he's always, yeah. Zach. Yeah. Yeah. He tweeted right before that they were doing something cool. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great piece UFC did. Obviously a great moment, a very tearful moment. I think it would be a good way to kind of describe that moment.
Yeah, man. It's literally unlike anything UFC's ever done. I can't think of a similar moment. Maybe we're fortunate because they haven't had fighters like in Matt Hughes' situation. It was really startling to see someone as young as Matt Hughes remembered as though he's like 8 years old. That was the most disturbing part.
Well, I mean, let's be honest about it, Daniel. How many people that were tuning in watched Matt Hughes live?
I think a lot.
You think? I mean, think about
live.
Well, I'm talking live when that fight actually happened. How many people?
That's tough, man.
I think it's a lot saying about how this sport has grown. There's still a lot of people out there. Their memories of Matt Hughes are, you know, watching something on YouTube or UFC Fight Pass.
That's freaky. It's weird because, like, it's hard for me to really gauge what people are thinking because I always assume that people have a similar MMA like timeline as I do. But you're probably right, and that's really freaky to think that a lot of people may not have seen him live. But, I mean, I started watching a little later than I probably most people. Like, I started watching when he was a little, maybe before he was doing The Ultimate Fighter with Sarah.
Think about this.
Way before, like.
Everyone has seen the highlight of his win over Frank Trigg.
But how many people have seen the fight?
That was April 16th, 2005.
Wow. I mean, this is a guy who, there was a point where he was just legitimately the best fighter in the world.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's. It's crazy to start seeing nostalgia for fighters that didn't fight under no holds barred rules, right? Like the idea that Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, Randy Couture, Matt Hughes are just like the MMA version of Bart Starr and Roger Staubach.
Yeah.
Is kind of freaky.
I mean, you're talking about a very young sport still. I mean the UFC is celebrating 25 years, so it's still a very young sport.
Yeah. So special moment. If you're a professional wrestling fan, it's very similar to in New Japan. There was this wrestler named Shibata who he wrestled in 2017, Jason, and it was a championship match. And they did a move where he did a stiff headbutt, as hard as possible, hit the champion. It was a phenomenal match, but literally that one move caused so much damage. Like the dude nearly died. And at one of their big shows, all of a sudden his entrance music plays out. And he just comes out to the ring and sits down and then comes back out. And everyone freaked out and cried. But that's a similar moment. But yeah, anyways, that was the coolest moment of the entire show. And yeah, my favorite moment was when he hugged Dan Lambert.
Yeah, that was an awesome moment. It'll be interesting to see if the UFC does more of that stuff going forward. But you know, we mentioned right at the beginning of the podcast, we are both excited for this weekend. It's one of those weekends, there's, a handful of weekends every year that you're just excited for because of what we're going to see on Saturday with the UFC and Bellator. And, one of the questions that, and we're going to kind of go in between these two fight cards, but one of the questions we did get was from Gus Congo asking for our top five fights, and I'm sure we both, number one, number two, I'm guessing we both have the same.
Joey Davis, Ian Butler.
Number one, Stipe Miocic, Francis Ngannou. Number two, Douglas Lima, Rory McDonald, right?
Yes, I totally agree with you.
Three
I guess,
through five was tough for me.
Yeah, I guess I tell you what. Okay, was it even close between Stipe Ngannou and McDonald Lima?
No. I mean, look, they're both, I would almost say it's 1A, 1B. But I don't. There was never a moment where I said, "Okay, Lima, McDonald's my number one fight."
Dude, yeah, to me it wasn't 1A, 1B, but it's pretty clear that it's 1-2, and then everything else. I mean, why do those two fights kind of separate themselves for you?
I mean, look, I mean, elite heavyweight title fight. That's what we're getting on Saturday night, and look, you have two of the best 170 pound fighters in the world. I mean, Douglas Lima may be one of the most disrespected champions. And I think part of that has to do with how much he got dominated by Ben Askren a couple of years ago. But this is Douglas Lima's opportunity to show that he's one of the best 170 pounders in the world. I mean, I love those two fights. Is it bad that my top five does not have Cormier, Ozdemir?
Mine, here's the thing. I haven't decided yet on my fifth fight.
Okay, number three was pretty easy for me.
Uh-huh.
What do you think it is?
I'll tell you mine. Rob Font and Thomas Almeida. Yep,
that's my number three.
That, to me, is going to be an amazing war.
I mean, it's a great fight to open up the pay-per-view.
Uh-huh.
The other two fights on the pay-per-view, I don't think are going to get fans excited at all.
Yeah, dude. Barroso and Vellante and Qatar and Burgos weren't close on. That main card is three deep. It really is.
Calvin Shane is a great fight at 145 pounds. But I think UFC 220 on Saturday could have been a better fight. It's got a lot of fights that I think are really set up for the local Northeast MMA fan when you look throughout this fight card.
Yeah.
But I feel like for a pay-per-view audience, it's kind of missing that other two fights. I mean, Almeida Font should be absolute craziness. I feel like it's missing two more. You have good fights, but I feel like it's kind of missing something.
Yeah, I do too. Look, I don't want to disparage Calvin and Shane because like that's a really good prelim FS1 fight. But yeah, I think when you have those big night feels, Jason, the thing that puts it over the top is five dope fights. And you got two and a half. I mean, you got a title fight, so I guess so. But yeah, Cormier, Ozdemir is the half, and we totally agree. I mean, simply put, the main event is like the most excited I've been about for heavyweight title fight since Kane and JDS squared up. Who's four for you? Actually, yeah, let's say we have four, the same number for four.
Gaethje and Chandler.
God, we are in sync. This is predictable as hell. I mean, this is another fight that to me is going to be amazing. And I'm so into what Yamauchi has been doing lately, Jason. And like, does Michael Chandler have more than one ankle? Like, we will figure it out. I'm excited.
And you're going to hear from Michael Chandler here momentarily, but let's do our number five fight.
Okay.
Five was really tough for me because I had three fights that were in contention.
Okay, wait. What are your three?
One was Cormier Ozdemir.
Uh-huh.
The second one was Shell Rampage.
Yeah.
And the third one was Corrales Karahanyan.
Okay. So that's where we differ.
So I ended up going Shell Rampage, and I think it's more of just intrigue of what do these guys have left. I guess it'll be interesting on Friday. How much more does Rampage weigh than Shell? I mean, he might have, if Shell, I would have guessed Shell comes in around 225. That'd be my guess. 220, 225, somewhere in that range. Could Rampage be as much as 260?
I think he's probably going to be 240 something. A 260 would be crazy, but not unbelievable, if that makes sense. Like, it depends on how much he's streaming on Twitch.
Well, I think if he comes in 260, I think a lot of people are going to will probably question how serious he's taking it.
And will his level of seriousness matter? I mean, I think this fight really shapes up as a great opportunity for Chael to just use his wrestling to steal. I haven't actually seen the odds for this one. Let me see. You see, the reason why I wouldn't include it, and I did narrow it down to like my final three, is this heavyweight tournament. The problem is like moving forward, it's hard for me to get excited about any of these. I can't even get on bestfightodds.com.
Shil San in plus 145.
Oh, he's 145?
Yeah, 140. He opened up at plus 120. He got down to plus 110, and he's at plus 145 as we record this. Rampage minus 155. I mean, I look at this fight, Daniel, and I think it's either Rampage wins by knockout in the first 6-7 minutes of this fight, or we see, you know, Shel Sonnen collect some checks on taking Rampage down, you know, three times.
Dude, if Chael gets a takedown in like 90 seconds, this one's over. Because I think being on his back is going to frustrate Rampage so much. And he may just check out over time. He could also just straight up finish Chael. And I've gone back and forth on this one for sure. And, you know, I guess that's why this one's compelling. It's just that the reason why I'm not down for this one is because long term, I don't know if these guys matter in the sport.
Who's your number five fight?
Well, I kind of thought about going Cormier Ozdemir just because Cormier is still the second best light heavyweight in the world. Ozdemir has done a lot. I think this fight could play out similar, where you either get like a quick knockout from Ozdemir or just a decision win out of Cormier. But overall, I think Cormier might finish. But you know what? I went number five. I went Dustin Ortiz and Alexander Pantoja. I love this fight at flyweight.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
I'm a big fan of, to me, the A side is Pantoja, but Dustin Ortiz is really good, if that makes any sense. I think we kind of know what Dustin Ortiz can do, and he's going to be scrappy and he's going to be competitive against practically everyone at flyweight. But Pantoja is so young. He was a major prospect heading into The Ultimate Fighter, and he represents a lot of upside. So that's my number five. But, I mean, let's dig into the one you mentioned too, Caracanian Corrales. Like, what to you sticks out about that fight?
Well, I mean, it's a big fight, 145 pounds. And one of the things, and, you know, with having the opportunity to talk to Henry, for, you know, throughout his time in Bellator, one of the things I do know is this is a guy that, you know, you look at early on, that 0-3 streak he went on. Those are all three fights he all took on short notice. But when you look at, since he's won these back-to-back fights, both fights that he's had a full fight camp. And you know, Georgie, who is a guy that, you know, man, it must have been like 6-7 months ago, he had told me he was talking about going up to 145 pounds, but he keeps taking 145-pound fights. It's just, it's a big fight, an interesting fight at 145, because, you know, there is kind of, you know, Bellator is looking for those new contenders, and this is a fight that is going to put one of these guys in that position.
You're right. It is a fight where I think Corrales, this is certainly his moment. And the issue is he's going up against a stalwart in Bellator. I'm not really excited about this fight, but when it happens, I'm going to really appreciate it. Like, I will say, to me, the only thing I'm going to watch out of Bellator is the main card. And if I hear that there's something on the prelim that I need to go check out, I might be surprised in saying that the Bellator viewing experience may be a bit more fun just because it's only five fights. And for UFC, like last week, bro, you never want to see fights get canceled. But when it went down from like a 14 fight card to a 12 fight card, I was like, this is much more manageable. So the Bellator experience may be fun because, I mean, that Aaron Pico fight may be over in a round and there's a lot on the line. I mean, what do you know about Pico's opponent, Shane Crookton?
He's a vet. You're actually going to hear from Aaron Pico here in a little bit where we talked about that. I mean, obviously, he's got to watch out for submission game of Shane. I mean, you know, it's very interesting to me how they have matched up Aaron Pico, because this is not how Scott Coker and Rich Chow do things. This is not how they build stars by, hey, let's give these guys the toughest opponents possible. It's just not what they do.
No, I mean, look at Michael Page, man. Look at Michael Page. This is it's refreshing. It was something we called out when it happened. Like, this is probably not the best idea in the world, but
the forgotten Michael Page.
No, he's likely a championship challenger. I think sooner rather than later. I hope, but Pico, man, this could be the start of something. I mean, people talk about him like he's the second coming of Jesus Christ. I mean, you interviewed him later on the show. Did he come across as a man that could cure your cancer, Jason? Or what? No, but I'm sure he's a great athlete, and I'm pretty sure he's going to win this fight, because even though this is a tough opponent, I mean, he's set up in the East. He's the man with the Wikipedia profile. All right, so Bellator. I'll just throw my picks out there. You tell me what you disagree with, Jason, all right? I got Pico. I know you interviewed Corrales, so you're probably going to have to pick him. But, Jason, unlike you, I'm not biased, and I think Caracanian will win that fight. I'm really concerned about picking Michael Chandler because that was traumatic the last time we saw him. But if you look at everything prior to that, even with the upgrade of Yamauchi's game, I feel pretty confident about Chandler. I'm going to feel stupid about this after he gets knocked out in 10 seconds, but I like Chael Sonnen. I just feel like he may, in fact, be more... He may be taking this tournament seriously, and that may be just all he needs, but he has the tools of wrestling to win this fight, as good as Jackson's takedown defense is. And the main event, Jason, as great and as underappreciated as Douglas Lima is, I think Rory McDonald may just be the best fighter in Bellator. It's either him or Musasi.
Yeah, I like Rory to win that fight. I'm going to go Rampage over Shale. I'm not confident in that pick. You know, I mean, look, I've had a chance to talk to Henry Krause a lot of times, but I still have to kind of lean with Georgie in that fight as well. Like Pico and like Chandler to win those fights. And by the way, speaking of Michael Chandler, I did have a chance to talk to him going to let you hear my conversation with Michael, and then myself and Dan are going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Bellator lightweight title picture. Michael, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Professionally speaking, how would you describe the last 6 months?
Professionally speaking, great, man. I've gotten a lot better. You know, I mean, there was a little bit of a setback, but man, the more I study life and individuals and this sport and other sports and other endeavors and other job professions, setbacks are nothing more than a means to be catapulted into an awesome comeback and an awesome story, man. You know, this, my career wouldn't be half of what it is without some of the losses that I've taken and some of the setbacks that I've taken. Not many people that you know could step into Madison Square Garden and a minute and a half into his fight, be rendered basically paralyzed in one leg and then gain more fans than if he would have won the fight. You know, the heart that I showed, telling, you know, screaming into the microphone to cut it off, telling him to kick it when I already knew he was injured and just taunting him. Man, I showed my heart. I showed my gall. I showed my relentlessness. And if it was a fight to the death, I win that fight 10 times out of 10. If a ref wasn't involved, I win that fight 10 times out of 10. And unfortunately, a ref and two doctors were involved. And here I am. And I'm excited to right what was wrong.
Anyone who follows you, in particular on Instagram, which is at Mike Chandler MMA, you had a recent post where you wrote, "The sooner you realize that failure is an event and not an individual, the sooner you can live a life of freedom." And I know you put a lot of, you know, quotes up there. You know, did you kind of feel that anyone thought that, 2017, in terms of your MMA career, was a failure?
Yeah, I mean, shoot, I fought one time and I was 0-1, you know, so by definition, if you look up, you know, failure in Webster Dictionary, I was a failure in 2017, but where the rubber really meets the road was, where else have I grown? How much did I grow because of that failure? How many people did I impact because of that failure? How great is my life? How great is my platform? How great is what I'm doing, piggybacking off of that failure, you know? And that's really what it was. That was a great Zig Ziglar who said, you know, failure is an event, not a person. And the more that we can realize that, and the more that we can realize that every single person that you have ever looked up to, every single person that I have ever looked up to has been a failure and will continue to be a failure, even though we consider them a success. Every single successful person you know has been a failure and at one point or another has been down on themselves and said, dang it, I failed. But then they dusted themselves off, they picked themselves back up, and because of that failure, and they didn't lose the momentum and didn't lose that motivation and didn't lose the steam, it carried them into success. So 2017 was a quote-unquote failure, and because of that, 2018 is going to be a phenomenal year for myself and on into the rest of my career, and I'm going to go down as one of the greatest lightweights of all time.
I had a chance recently to talk to Brent Primus about, you know, what has happened the past couple months. And he has said that all expectations were was you and him were going to lock horns at some time in January. Obviously, that did not happen. And I know you've kind of, you know, moved past that. But do you ever feel that a rematch will ever happen between you and Brent?
I could care less, man. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he needs that fight more than I do. I mean, I don't want the belt. I don't need the belt. It's 12 pounds of leather and gold, and I got four of them sitting on my shelf in at my house in Nashville. You know, I don't want belts. I want big fights. I want big names. I want big tests. He is none of them. And he's fought one time per year in the last 8 years. So you look at a guy like Yamauchi, who's got 18 submission finishes. Yamauchi, myself, and the man that you just mentioned all have been fighting for the same amount of time. Yamauchi has 24 fights. I have 20 fights, and the aforementioned champ has 8. So you do the math. You tell me who the part-time fighter is. You tell me who most likely turned down this fight. And I think I wanted to take a bigger test, a better name, a scarier name, someone that's going to test me, someone that's going to really step into that cage and fight me. And that's where I'm at. So I don't want a rematch. Don't need a rematch. Could care less. I want bigger and better names than him.
In terms of Gaethje and his submission game, is he the most dangerous submission artist you've ever faced?
Yeah, probably. But that's who, you know, that's who Marcin Held was, you know, a couple of years ago. And he almost ripped my leg off, and I didn't tap when 99% of people would have. And then I ended up choking him out in the first round. At this level, every single person that you fight is extremely dangerous. Every single person can knock you out or submit you at any moment. This man is no different. I've watched his last performances. He's done very well against pretty mediocre competition or guys that have just really, you know, fallen asleep in the middle of the cage for some reason and somehow given up an armbar or given up a rear naked choke. Man, I'm by no means looking past him, but I have never left any stone unturned in my training. I'm very well versed on the feet, on the ground, and I'm mentally, physically, and spiritually sharper than any man in the world. So I'm going to step into the cage here in about a week and go out there and just shut him down. You know, I mean, I'm better than him on the feet. I'm better than him in the submission game. My defense is impenetrable when it comes to submission defense. So I'm really not going to say I'm not worried because I will always be on my guard. But in a fight, when I'm on top of you and I'm putting pressure on you and I'm smothering you and I'm swarming you and I'm hitting you, the last thing you're going to think about is trying to submit me. You're just trying to survive. And that's what most people do in the cage with me. And it will be no different January 20th.
I'm sure most of my audience has read the piece that Chuck Mendenhall wrote about you and, you know, what has gone on with you the past couple months outside of competition with adopting a child. And I've talked to a lot of guys, and I'm not a father, so I don't know how this is, but they've talked about that once you become a father, you start to look at life differently. For you, has it allowed you yourself to look at not just your MMA career differently, but just kind of how you live day in and day out?
Yeah, man. I mean, I didn't even know what purpose was until October 2017. You know, I didn't even really, you know, life continues to change and it continues to evolve. And you think you want something, or you think you are pursuing something, or you think your passion is this, or you think your calling is that, or you think your purpose is something. And then God reveals something to you and it takes it to a whole nother level. And that's really where I'm at. I am so much of a different person now than I was before adopting Hap. And man, the fighter I am as a father, the man I am as a father, the competitor I am as a father is so much different than what I ever thought would be possible. And now having two mouths to feed and two people relying on me and depending on me and two people to serve and two people to love, and not just two people, two of the most important human beings walking the face of this earth, has given me a sixth gear that I didn't even know was possible. And like you, I've heard all the stories of, you know, wait till you're a father. You know, I've heard all those wait till you're a father stories, and I always just kind of brushed them off, and I got excited and I can't wait to have a child, blah, 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 blah. But when it actually happens, it's a game changer. When it actually happens, it's something that every single ounce of your being has changed and changed for the better. And January 20th is going to be a masterpiece and a direct reflection of the new Michael Chandler, the man who thought he was a great competitor, you know, in 2017, and now in 2018, it's on a whole nother level.
You mentioned about, you know, you're looking for the big fights. You know, everyone knows this is about, you know, this is the prize fighting game. Is your next fight at 170?
I don't know. I want my next fight to be a big fight, you know, whether it's at 170, whether it's some other big name, you know, I mean, whether it could be a new signing, whether it could be whatever, but I mean, it's got to be a big name. It's got to be something that excites me. I mean, Bellator only fights me once every 6 months anyway, so I might as well wait. For a big name. You know, I might as well wait for someone to step into the cage with me and sign on the dotted line. You know, I waited and waited and waited, and one guy said no, and one guy was on maternity leave. And he said no, and another guy stepped up, so I took that fight. And to be quite honest, the latter is a lot more dangerous than the former. So that's what I want. I want big fights. I want big names. I deserve that. I've earned that. If not, you know, we'll see what happens.
Once again, we're joined by Michael Chandler, who returns to the Bellator cage coming Saturday night, January 20th, live on the Paramount Network, Bellator 192. Michael, final thing. I've been asking a lot of guys about this. I want to take you back to August 8th, 2009, your first pro fight. What do you remember about that night?
I remember it was in a little ballroom at Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri. Tyron Woodley was wrapping my hands. Tyron Woodley was my corner man. Tyron Woodley got me that fight. Man, I went out there. I was very surprised at how not nervous I was, and it just felt natural. I was going to go get into a fight in a cage for the first time in my life. Had just got done with nationals 3 months prior, in St. Louis, Missouri, wrestling at University of Missouri. So I was just fresh off of that competition, but this was different. This was different. You know, this is a whole different ball game. This is punches and kicks and knees and elbows, and I wasn't scared. I wasn't nervous. I went out there, threw two punches, picked the guy up, put him down, and proceeded to throw 250 punches on top of him until the ref jumped in and called it a TKO. And since then, I haven't looked back. Since then, I've made a phenomenal, living and life for myself and my family. And I thank God every day for this sport. And I thank God every day for Tyron Woodley and Ben Askren for being my big brothers and mentors and helping me get into this sport, and Eve Edwards and Luigi Fioravanti, some of the guys who really helped me get into this sport. And it's cool, man. And at 31 years young, just now finally hitting my prime, I got some very good years left, and the best is yet to come. So stay tuned.
Do you ever get nervous before a fight?
No, I don't, man. I mean, I get nervous for my friends' fights. This weekend when Michael Johnson and Kamaru Usman step into the cage, I'll be watching, from afar on TV, and I'm going to get nervous. I'm going to get a sick, nervous feeling in my stomach because I care about those guys and I don't have any control over those guys. But man, I've never been the guy who's gotten nervous because, you know me as Michael Chandler, the fighter, Michael Chandler, the guy who has, put his identity in fighting and fighting is my way of living. But man, if this was all taken away from me tomorrow, I'd still be the happiest man on the planet because I'd be Bree Chandler's husband and I'd be Hap Whitaker Chandler's father. And I have some amazing people around me and a God that loves me. And I have a platform that I can use to reach people. So I don't get nervous. If I go out there and get knocked out, submitted, lose in the first round, my God still loves me. My family still loves me. My true fans still love me. So really at the end of the day, all I did was lose a competition. It's not that big of a deal, And if you can live your life with that much joy and that much certainty in your calling and that much certainty in yourself, there's never a reason to be nervous. I've always prepared well. I've never left one stone unturned in my preparation. I deserve great things. And if I go out there and win, it's because I worked hard. If I go out there and lose, it's because it was bad luck. And that's really all there is to it. And that's where I stand. And I just thank God every day that he put me in this sport. And January 20th, I get to do what I love in front of millions of people on Paramount Network and TMT, by the way. It's simulcasting on TMT. So that's really cool.
Did not know that. Did not know they were going to be on CMT. Thanks for the information, Mike. I appreciate it, and look forward to seeing your fight on Saturday night, man.
Here you go. You got it, man. Thank you.
And there was my conversation with Michael Chandler and Daniel. Scott Coker came out this week and said the winner of this fight between Gaethje and Michael is going to get the title matchup. And, I get that, and you hear what Michael had to say there when I asked him about the Brent Primus situation. I feel like he's totally moved on from it. I do know that Brent was expecting to fight here in January. He thought he was ultimately going to headline next week's Bellator 193. That's not going to happen. It's just, for Brent Primus, every indication I get is the guy's ready to take a fight.
Yeah, he is not the one that ended the fight with a leg injury back in June. And he's the champion. But for Primus, unfortunately, it still feels like at lightweight, the spotlight is shining bright on Michael Chandler. He's the A player. And that's a really weird place to find yourself as a champion, So it's been a situation that I don't think has been handled as smoothly as possible by both parties. But simply put, if Chandler wins or if he loses, the winner, Yamauchi or Chandler, clearly they got to fight Primus, and it's likely going to happen. Again, every time a promoter announces anything, you always question the likelihood of it happening until it's signed pen to paper. But, you're a guy who's in the loop. you kind of wiggled around it, Jason. If you had to put your name on it, when do you think Primus's next offense is?
Oh, man. April. Co-main event of Fedor Mir.
It's a good call. I could see it.
I mean, this is the thing. I was fairly shocked when I saw that they're doing Compost Pitbull 2. I thought they were going to give Pitbull the title shot.
I think it tells you that they want to dot their I's and cross their T's, and they're looking at Primus Chandler. Not to discount Yamauchi.
I think one of the most remarkable fights they potentially could have at lightweight is Patricky Pitbull, Michael Chandler.
Yeah, I think so too. And the crazy thing is, like, you have two fighters that have been a part of Bellator for such a long time, and as dominant as it was, you know, the quick win over Chandler, over Patricky, I feel like Patricky has upgraded his arsenal a tad bit more to make this one interesting.
Yeah. Let's start to kind of wrap up the Bellator 192 part of this. Go let you hear from Aaron Pico. Aaron coming off that, highlight reel knockout win, getting his first professional win. I did have a chance to talk to him and talk to him about his matchup coming up on Saturday night at Bellator 192. Aaron, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Jason. How are you? How's everything?
I'm doing great. Doing great, man. How's the weather out in California?
It's good now. It's cleared up. Kind of sucks. I haven't been able to ride him like in 2 days. Actually, I rode him this morning. I didn't get to ride him yesterday because it was raining so hard. So that was warmer. But yeah, it's clear. But we needed the rain. We need the rain. Rain is always good. But now it's sunny.
Yeah, I'm in Florida. We went for like a week of cold weather. I'm glad my 75, 80 degree weather is back. But you've got this fight coming up here. Of course, as we're talking, we're just a little more than a week out from this fight. As you think about heading into your last fight in comparison to heading into this fight, is there maybe just not feeling that additional pressure of everyone just kind of looking at you and going, hey, can this guy live up to the hype? I mean, is that the simple difference of the fact of you showed everyone what you can do in the cage?
Yeah, it's a bunch of to do. I mean, even after the first fight going into the second fight, I knew I had to block everything out. I blocked everything out. Nothing could get to me. I walked into that fight, I just blocked it. Like I said, I blocked everything out, and I knew if I just relaxed and do what I do, I was going to come out victorious, and which I did. Antonio McKee did a great job with that whole training camp. And going into this fight with us, we've continued where we left off from the last fight. Just keep building and staying relaxed. I mean, right after my last fight, I was still back in the gym working. I was actually Miguel Cotto's sparring partner for Saddam Ali. So I was back in there for about six weeks there training with him and with Freddie Roach. Even after Miguel's fight, I was at Wild Card working and with Antonio. So now that I'm getting closer to the fight, I'm not as much as there because I'm with Antonio every day working on my MMA. But yeah, since my last fight, I've just been in training and becoming the best fighter I can possibly be. Like I said, I'm new to the sport at the professional level, so I got to keep building and improving every day. So every day is crucial for me. Every month, every time, I need time, so I'm building, I'm learning a lot. So going into this fight, I feel a lot more confident. I've worked every position that you can possibly think of, every scenario in my head, and we're ready. We're ready for anything.
Is staying relaxed, can that all be an issue for you?
No, honestly, I mean, of course, yeah, you got to relax. I mean, but I think that's one word that we just say, just like you say, just relax, let your shots come, don't rush in. I think that's the biggest thing, don't rush in. I mean, my first fight, obviously, I rushed in and got hit with that uppercut, which he transitioned to a choke. I rushed in. Me, after that last fight, I mean, I was relaxed. I mean, my style is kind of a go forward in the pocket, looking to pick my shots. So that's kind of who I am. And anybody in the division, if I just graze you on the chin, you're going to go down. You're going to go down, let alone hit you solid on the chin. You will go out like Justin Lin did the last fight. So I'm confident in my hands, confident in my kicks as well. And on the ground, I've worked every possible situation that you can think of. Antonio McKee is a great coach, and we're ready for anything. Everybody at the body shop has done a great job with helping me prepare for this fight. So now it's just staying relaxed for the fight and doing what I do on January 20th. So
of course, everyone remembers that first fight was at 155. The second fight against Justin was at 145. On fight night, did you feel different at all with being at a lighter weight class, or did you kind of feel the same?
I feel so much better at featherweight. That's my weight. 155 is like, it's actually harder to go 155 than it is 145, if that makes any sense. It really does, because I have to eat so much, do so much stuff to keep on weight to make 145, at least at 155. But at least at 145, I just eat normal. I mean, I eat very, very good. I mean, all organic, grass-fed meats, everything. So my nutritionist and conditioning coach, Sam Calavita, does a great job with it. So it's actually easier to make 145 because I just eat normal. I don't have to, you know, eat too much. And I make weight easily. I mean, like I said, last fight when I weighed in, I was 2 pounds under. So, I mean, it's not difficult to make at all. So I feel a lot better fight night. I don't feel heavy. I feel my body frame, my height, 145 is the perfect weight for me.
And you're taking on a veteran of sport in Shane Crutchin, who's got 15 professional fights, 12 victories. He's coming off a win at the end of 2016. Assess him as an opponent. What gets you excited about this matchup? And, you know, what do you have to be on the lookout for from him on fight night?
Crutchin is a very tough guy. He speaks for itself. He's a 12-3 guy. He's been in the sport a very, very long time. He's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. And he's a gamer. And you don't get 12 victories by not showing up to fight. So I think he's a tough guy. He's got some experience on me, but I'm ready for whatever. I do this for a living. I wake up on how do I become the best fighter in the world. And I'm preparing every single day with my coach and my team at the body shop. I know that when those doors lock January 20th, I will be ready for everything. And I'm going to come in there like a tank. And I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. I'm not going to get tired. That's not even an issue. I'm prepared on the ground. I'm prepared on my feet. So I will walk out victorious.
You know, he's a finisher. And 9 of his 12 victories have come by stoppage. Majority of those wins have come via submission. Do you look at him as just a very well-rounded fighter? Or do you think that, you know, his bigger strength is in the submission game?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think everybody has their strengths. I think he's obviously a different, he's probably better on the ground than he is on his feet. So that's just kind of, you know, just be aware. But I've worked so much on the ground. I compete with Antoni McKee and Jason Manley. And AJ McKee is great on the ground for me as a partner. So working with AJ is just, it's up my game so much. And I'm ready. I'm ready for the ground pound if need to be taken down, to stay on my feet, to use my kicks. I'm solid everywhere in this game. I'm not a master at it and probably will never be a master at it. Nobody's a master at anything. I'm just going to keep improving my skills to be the best fighter in the world, stay sharp, stay healthy, and the sky's the limit. Now I just got to go out there and perform January 20th, which we will. We will. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my coach's mind or my training partner's mind that we're going to win Saturday on January 20th. So I'm excited. I mean, it's just fight night is a celebration of all the work that you've put in. There's nothing to be really, of course, you're nervous, but there's nothing to be scared of. I've done everything I possibly can to prepare myself for that day. Just relax and take my time, and it will come.
You know, when you think about, obviously the main goal is to go out there and get the win, but is there anything else that maybe you want to prove to yourself in this matchup?
Win. That's the whole goal. I don't care how it comes. Bottom line is black or white, you win. You win, that solves everything. And that's my whole mindset. I'm ready for everything. On the ground, I could submit him on the ground. I definitely can. On the feet, I can definitely knock him out. If I just graze him, he'll go out. I mean, so I'm comfortable. If with that mindset, I'm aware. I'm confident. Am I aware that he can knock me out? Absolutely. That's why my guard is going to be up. I'm going to be ready to go, firing on all cylinders. And I'm ready to fight. Let's just go in there and let's fight. You think you're better than me, and I think I'm better than you. And let's go fight, because I'm coming after you. I'm coming to take your head off. Simple and plain.
Is there part of you that maybe the goal is to somehow top the highlight reel knockout you had over Justin?
No. I mean, if I just take my time, it definitely can come. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, everybody has a game plan. Everybody has, but the smart ones can adjust. If some, well, maybe this is not landing. Maybe I need to take him to the ground. So, see, I mean, I can't just say in there, I'm going to go in there and knock him out. Will I knock him out? Can I? Absolutely. But it's a fight, you know. When you go into war, yeah, you have a plan to go mission. But hey, something might not happen. Something may screw that up, so you might have to do a certain route. So we'll see how it goes. That's all. It's the fight game. But that's what makes it so unique, and that's what makes it fun. That this might not work, so I'm going to go to this. If that doesn't work, I'm going to go to this. It's a game where you got to just be focused and ready to go. So it's going to be fun. But I know I'm, like I said, I just graze him. He'll go down. I take him down. He's got to worry about me on top of him. Antonio and the key pressure that I've learned. I mean, he's going to have a hard time taking me down. Can I take him down? I will. Absolutely. So you make your predictions.
Now, when it comes to fight day, are you a superstitious guy? Like, you go through the same routine, or you just go with the flow?
I just go with the flow. The only superstition that I have is something weird. You're probably going to think I'm very weird. I just don't step on red lines. That's the only thing that I won't do, step on red lines. But other than that, I just go through my whole routine. I mean, I wake up and I do my juicing on fight day. I just get cold pressed juice, eat my same meals that my body's accustomed to. I go say a prayer at the church, relax, come back to my hotel room when it's time to go. I put on my suit and get my stuff ready to go, and I know it's time to fight. So it's a good day. But like I said, my superstition is I don't know what it is. I won't step on red lines.
When did that start?
It bugs me if I step on a red line. From a very young age at wrestling tournaments, I won't step on a red line.
I mean, can you even remember, like, the first time that you're like, okay, I can't step on that red line? I mean, is there a memory that you have of that?
No, I don't even – I don't even really remember. Like, red painted curbs, I won't step on. Red lines, I won't step on. Yeah.
Now, like,
very weird. I'm very strange.
Like, are we talking, like, it's got to be, like, a straight red line? Or, like, if it's, like, even a logo that has red on it, you don't step on it?
Yeah. Even if it has a hint of orange in there, I probably won't. It looks like red, I won't step on it. I have no idea what it is. It's just that I'm a weird guy, but
yeah, you know, I think a lot of athletes listening to that would go, no, that's not weird. I don't think athletes would find that weird.
Yeah. You yeah, know? True. Yeah, like I said, there's probably some baseball players. I see, like, they're like baseball players that won't step on, like, the line when they're going back to the dugout. Not too familiar with baseball, but I know a lot of baseball players are very, very superstitious as well. But that's the only thing. I know at the end of the day, too, because when I was wrestling, I was, like, very, very, like, superstitious. Like, I had to wear, like, you know, I had a certain pair of underwear that I wore on tournament day. And if it was a two-day tournament, I would make sure they were washed for the next day because I had to wear those. But as I got older, at the end of the day, the man that puts in the most work in day is going to win. Not what underwear you wear, what socks you wear, how you walk out, or if you step on a red line. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You just got to show up on that day, on that night, and win. So,
and I'll tell you, I work for the
I'm scared of stepping on a red line, but it's whatever.
Hey, look, I get you. I work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network, and we go on a winning streak. I you know what? If a certain polo, wash it up, wear it the next week until we lose. I get what you're talking about.
Yeah, everybody has their thing. Yeah, there's some people that are probably really, really crazier than I am. But yeah, that's like my thing. So I know it's crazy, but hey, the brain is a very weird thing.
Exactly. But we look forward to seeing your fight Saturday night, January 20th, live on the Paramount Network. Of course, going to be headlined by Douglas Lima, defending the welterweight title against Rory McDonald. Aaron, as always, man, I appreciate time. Look forward to seeing your fight. And, of course, let all my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media.
Yeah, you can find me at Aaron Pico USA on Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, Aaron Pico. But, Jason, I appreciate the time. Thank you. It was a blast. I look forward to the future talking some more.
So, Daniel, of course, the biggest takeaway that I took from the interview with Aaron Pico is the fact of his superstition on competition day is to not walk on a red line.
That is super specific. And this would be horrifying for Pico to find out at mid-20s that he's actually colorblind and he didn't know which one was red and which one was orange. But geez, I wonder if he will find – I wonder how many red lines are around the forum. Like who's in charge of it? And if it happens, like what happens? Does he just pull out of the fight? Is that what is going to happen if he comes across a red line? I don't know, man. But
yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, look, I think we all have superstitions, especially as sports fans. I mean,
yeah, look, what's your superstition?
I'll tell you this. So, you know, I work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network. If we win a game the next week, all right, obviously washing the polo shirt, but I'm wearing the same polo shirt the next game until we lose, and we got to switch up the polo shirt. That is my superstition.
Wow, that's a good one, man. Look, I work broadcast for UTRGV, and well, we don't win enough for me to have any superstitions quite yet. So I probably got to workshop it. Maybe the problem is I'm washing my underwear. But yeah, man, you know, the polo, that's a simple one. I want something. I mean, the red line, that to me is unique, and it's also one that's really manageable. Like, it's really manageable to do to not step on a red line. It'd be more if it's like he had to do a 1.5 hour meditation session or DDP yoga. So pretty – Pico is very much – and you kind of get the sense. This is a guy who's pretty special but also kind of quirky in a weird way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously they're giving him tough opponents. And when you look at Shane Crutchen, people may remember him from the World Series of Fighting. That's where his last two fights took place. This is his first fight since getting a win at WSO at 34 at the end of 2016. Prior to that, his previous fight for that was 2014. And, you know, it's always when you look at Aaron Pico, because we both know, you know, Bellator is trying to build stars, and Pico could be that star. But it's just kind of, I ultimately don't understand the thought process of the people around Pico in these fights. I just, because at the end of the day, this is his third professional fight, and you're taking on a guy who's got a pro record of, what, 12-3 or 12-4?
Yeah, and this is a guy, not only his third professional fight, this isn't a multi-time, three-time Olympian who's 29 years old. This isn't someone like Lomachenko. This is a 21-year-old kid who's younger than me. And it just makes no sense, because he obviously has potential, but the one thing that can get in the way of potential for Pico is mental loss, like mentally losing the fight or mentally being in a bad place in your career. And putting him in the fire like they have puts him in a real position to be in that state where he just lacks confidence. And that to me is the biggest enemy. But look, man. In this sport, we do see meteoric rises. We could be talking about Aaron Pico as a 22-year-old next year, challenging for a championship. It could happen. I mean, look at what a year has made, the difference in a year for a fighter like Francis Ngannou, dude. Like he looked great. Think of what we thought of him before he fought on UFC on Fox against Luis Enrique.
No, here's a better example of that, Daniel.
Yeah.
Volkan Ozdemir.
Yeah, that's a way better example. This year was insane.
His year ago at this time, he was just getting the short notice call up to fight OSP on Super Bowl weekend.
And I picked him as a joke. Like, I was just joking, I think. And I just picked him and he won. So then I picked him again against Serkinov and he won. And yeah. But
did you see Cormier's trash talking on Hawani show on Monday?
What'd he say?
He's talking about, because obviously Ozdemir trains at the same gym as Rumble Johnson, and he called Ozdemir the JV fighter, where Rumble was the varsity fighter.
That is messed up and probably true. That is probably true.
Here's, I am surprised by this, Daniel. Cormier is only a 3-1 favorite.
That's man, there's a lot of money coming in from
this is the thing. If Cormier is going to lose, it's in the first 3 minutes.
And that wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world for a fighter who has been tagged at times in his fights, yeah, and who is also 38. Look,
this fight gets out of the first 5 minutes. I would be shocked if Ozdemir wins.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if it gets past 3 minutes, I think that's when you look at like DC has figured out how not to get destroyed by the hands of Vulcan.
Like, I feel bad, like, having this, you know, I remember, you know, yesterday I was sitting there thinking, like, okay, maybe I'm just overlooking Ozdemir too much. And I just, the only case you can make is he just catches Cormier in the first round.
Yeah.
Now, and the one thing I did find interesting that Cormier did talk about is he said, you know, Ozdemir is really good in the clinch, and that's where I like to take the fight. And, of course, anyone who's watched the Daniel Cormier fight, you know, he loves to get a guy up against a fence and work in the clinch. And, you know, look, and obviously Cormier has had a deal with a reach disadvantage in his two fights with John Jones, which is also very interesting to me is I would have thought that that cloud of John Jones would kind of be over this fight, but it's really not. But, you know, the other thing that I really liked what Daniel Cormier, he said is he is viewing this fight as he is fighting for the vacant title. You know, it basically says that he's not going to feel like he is a champion until they put that belt around his waist, you know, on Saturday night after a victory over Volkan Ozdemir. I really liked hearing that from Cormier because, you know, he sits there and he's like, look, I got beat.
That's the attitude he needs to have going into this fight. Not only to perform, but to perform against an opponent where it's easy to get lost in how big of a favorite you are. At a point in his career where he's kind of towards the end of his run, Jason, that's kind of the hunger he needs to have. And for Volkan, I think it's as simple as getting respect. I mean, he has the ability, we know it, he has the ability to get the finish. But I think most people predicting this fight and fans heading into it have zero confidence Ozdemir is going to win this fight. But he has the ability to us be in a world on Monday or Tuesday, whenever we record next week, where Volkan Ozdemir is light heavyweight champion. That's a real possibility, not a probability. But Ozdemir, this is like, is he just going to be a guy who is a one-time challenger and moves back down the ranks? Or are we just not seeing kind of what's right in front of us? And that's just a destruction machine straight out of the Switzerland. Like I understand that there isn't much details and layers to this prediction, but it is exciting to see that you know what Ozdemir does well, and it's possible for him to do that well and get the win over Cormier.
Now, Cormier, I think, has done a very good job on Twitter of just kind of responding to people. And so Ozdemir put out this post on Instagram where it was two pictures, one picture of when John knocked out Daniel at UFC 214, and also, of course, that night is when Volkan beat Jimmy Manuwa. And, you know, and then Daniel Cormier's response was, savage post, Volkan Ozdemir, but since no one knows you or follows you, I'll send it out to the public. 3,000 likes for such a good post seems like a waste. Quick to point out that you're no John Jones, and I'm no Jimmy Manuwa, and I'm a lot better than Kelly Anderson. Hashtag tap machine, hashtag bum, hashtag UFC 220.
That is a savage
post by DC. I see you, DC.
That is savage, man. That's probably why he's going to win. I tell you what, Daniel Cormier is like the Francis Ngannou of social media. He's just not the Francis Ngannou of MMA. He's really good, but man, he's as savage as an Ngannou knockout because Jesus, he went there, man. He went Kelly and Nunsen deep. He went Bellator deep on Volkan, and it's almost like he's like a. It's like the weights are off because the weights were on when he was going up against John Jones, who was getting some victories of his own on social media over DC. And it just seems like Volkan just he's overmatched when it comes to trash talk on Twitter and Moco Space.
Yeah, Kelly Anderson, according to his Wikipedia page, hasn't fought since 2014 when he lost to Liam McGarry. Of course, it was a neck crank submission that he had over Volkan Ozdemir in Bellator. But, you know, is there anyone outside of Volkan's camp that's picking Volkan to win?
I'm not. You're not. And and we are just going to sound so stupid on Monday.
Yeah, we've been known to do that. Of course, main event, it's the fight of the weekend. Stipe and Francis Ngannou. I don't think there's many people that doubt the UFC wants Francis to win. But, you know, you talk about, I was watching the first episode of Embedded, and I'm just kind of sitting there going, how is Stipe not a bigger star than what he is? Because the guy is just so damn likable. It's just, I just don't understand how he's not a bigger star. My pick is Stipe in this fight, just because I feel he has more ways to win. I think his footwork is ultimately going to be a key to his victory in this fight, but would it shock me if Francis Ngannou knocks him out? Not in the least. But part of the storyline this week should be the fact of Stipe Miocic just trying to make UFC history here.
He's going to be the first fighter to ever defend the title 3 straight times, right?
Yeah. UFC heavyweight title. Take that one into, I mean, like, that's the
oldest title.
Stat.
That's the oldest title in the promotion, is it not?
I believe
it has
so.
To be. It has to be. I mean, this is,
I think, there's been like 21 heavyweight champions. No, that seems kind of high.
That does seem high, but also we're talking about like, okay. So for sure, the title was crowned at UFC 12, Mark Coleman. And there has been, oh my gosh, 19. So, Francis wins, it'd be 20. And I'm sure some, I will say that's like a thesis, dude. That how is Stipe Miocic not a star? Because he literally is an American heavyweight who is considered the best fighter at heavyweight and has won his last 4 fights via first round stoppage against high caliber opponents. And he's from Cleveland, and he's a firefighter. Maybe it's because his name is Stipe Miocic, but I honestly have no idea. It's a shame. And if there's a night where he's going to become a star, it's this one. And I tell you what, not only does he have the ability to make history there, but Stipe in his next 2 fights, if he does win them both, I think has real possibility to be known as like literally the best heavyweight of all time. Just because, let's say he beats Ngannou and he fights Kane and beats Kane. The list of wins over Arlovski, Verdum, Overeem, JDS, Kane, and Ngannou, that has to be like, and also Mark Hunt, has to be the most impressive streak we've ever seen a heavyweight do.
I was watching the Countdown show and they were showing highlights of that Hunt fight, and I remember watching that fight going, will someone please stop the fight? Will someone please stop the fight?
Oh, yeah, but that was also a moment where honestly, the Junior Dos Santos fight where he lost was the moment where I realized that Stipe was like the real deal. But then he just, Mark Hunt was like, his body was like, if you go to a slaughterhouse or a meat market and you just see the meat hanging down there that Rocky hit box trains on, like that was Mark Hunt. That was scary. That was sad. And Stipe's a dangerous guy. And to me, even though most people are picking Ngannou, I think Stipe's the safer pick and the smarter pick. But I'm still going to ride the Ngannou train. There's just something unreal about this fighter, how hard he hits, how great he's looked, his adjustment, and it seems like his intelligence level was maybe something we don't talk about a lot. We mostly talk about the raw physical aspects, but there is some genius quality to what he's doing inside the cage, and that's kind of why I'm riding with Francis Ngannou to become the new champion.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, but I'm going to go with Stipe Miocic to win there. By the way, something I got to mention on Bellator. Can we please stop the live and free BS line?
Dude, it's so stupid to say something is free.
It's not free, because last time I checked, I had to pay a lot of goddamn money for DirecTV.
I can tell you how I can get it live and free, but I tell you what, I also got to pay an internet service, so it isn't free that way either.
It's false advertising.
It's stupid, man.
If you're on CBS, all right, it's free.
National TV.
Yeah.
Even then, man.
You still gotta go out and buy the bunny ears. I mean, but like, sit there and say, hey, it's live and free, but oh, by the way, you gotta pay a cable bill, it's probably at least $100.
For the Paramount Network. I mean, I don't wonder what's gonna happen more. I accidentally call Spike TV Spike TV. Or I call it the year 2017 instead of 2018. It's going to take some changing to call it the Paramount Network. But yeah, live and free is dumb.
Yeah, also on simulcasting on CMT, they're doing the national anthem before the main event.
Wait.
You didn't hear that one? Trace Atkins is doing the national anthem on Saturday night at Bellator.
Are they only going to air the national anthem on CMT? Like, do they know their audience? Jesus, Trace Atkins is?
Yeah.
That sounds awful. Are they going to get, okay, so obviously it's going to be the same broadcast for CMT and Paramount?
Yeah, just as
I mean, they're basically saying they're moving to CMT if this is successful. I think. I could be wrong.
I just never have gotten rebranding. I mean, there's always a reason why you're rebranding. You know, so I just look at this and I just go, I just don't know where Bellator fits in and what they're trying to do on Paramount Network.
Yeah, this appears to be a transition. We'll see how successful it is. But also, like, when you're splitting your audience across two channels, you don't really get a sense, you know? It's hard. It's difficult.
Now, on Friday night, we have LFA 31 on Access TV. I watched LFA 30 last Friday night. Had a brutal knockout by Christian Aguilera. Of course, I talked to Christian earlier this week. You can check that out on the MMAReport.com. But one of the men that's going to be a part of that fight card, Access TV, Casey Kenney, of course, was on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. He is going to be taking on Kendrick Latchman in a catchweight bout of 130 pounds. I had a chance to catch up with him. Going to let you hear that conversation. And when we come back, myself and Dan are going to wrap up this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Casey, as always, man, I appreciate time. Of course, last time we talked was right before the second fight you had there on the Contender Series. Unfortunately, that one did not go your way. I know you've talked about it in other interviews. I thought it was really fascinating that you went back and started looking at the judges' histories in terms of scorecards. Is that something that even back when you had your draw in your initial LFA fight that you went back and did?
Yes. So the guy that actually scored the draw on the LFA fight is on the Arizona Commission is 75 years old and senile. I know all the judges that have scored it against me, you know, and I've done a little judging history, and I think all of mixed martial arts needs to take a look at their judges, because most of them weren't even MMA wasn't even a thing when they were even in their prime. Most of the judges haven't even done a mixed any type of fighting sport in their life, I feel like. So, you know, not to knock the judges too much. I can take it out of the hands of the judges anytime, but I went and did a little research of who scored it against me. You know, I was pretty upset about that last one. It didn't just take the fight from me. It took a few other things from me, too. So I was getting to the bottom of who was behind it.
Is that what, you know, we hear about it. I come from a football world. And one of the things you hear about is when a team is preparing for a game, like, you know, this weekend, you know, we've got you know, the conference title games where the teams will actually start looking at the officials, try to find tendencies. Have you done that on your own? Maybe, hey, this guy, if you score takedowns, it seems to go very high in his mind. I mean, do you even go that far?
No, you know, what I'm trying to do is finish fights always, you know what I mean? But at the level that we're all competing out at, you know, that's sometimes hard to do. You know, I feel like in my last two fights, I did everything but finish the guys.
You know, and of course, you've noted you did have an injury, and you've been, you know, you had to rehab that injury. What's the toughest part about rehabbing the injury? Is it just simply not being able to be in the room and help out your teammates?
You know, I always try to get in there and do what I can, but, you know, it was just really like pushing that extra, you know, that extra 20-30% that I like to push, you know, in the sparring and the pads and all that stuff. You know, obviously I was pushing the rest of my body, you know, as much as I could, but, you know, with that, I could only push so much.
You know, in terms of how, you know, in terms of being 100%, I mean, how long did it take you to actually recover?
I think around like December 1st was when I started feeling around like 100%, you know, so it was a few months afterwards. I didn't realize how much I wasn't using my arm until, you know, I started using it again. Had to like retrain my arm how to throw punches and stuff. So it was a little bit of a process, but, you know, it's not my first injury. You know, I've came back from ACL, meniscus surgeries, that type of thing. So this one was pretty mild compared to some other injuries.
Was there something that, you know, the normal person, everyday life that we all do every day that while you're recovering from that shoulder injury that you realized you just couldn't do?
I mean, there, at one point I couldn't, you know, before the CJ fight up until fight week, I couldn't even hold my arm up in the air like this. So, you know, in front of my face. So it was challenging. I couldn't sleep on my one side for a few months. Oh. It'd wake me up in the middle of the night, you know? So there's little things that go on, but, you know, like I said, it's part of the fighting life. I embrace it. And all these lumps that I'm taking along the way, it's only making me stronger.
And of course, this is your second fight here in LFA. Of course, the last one, a split draw. Do you at all kind of look at this as a redemption to kind of show, the management team of LFA of who you are?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think they saw a little bit of who I was that night, but they're going to get a little bit more of Casey Kinney this time.
In terms of Kendrick Latchman, he's a guy that I'm very familiar with, you know, with throughout his fighting career. But for you, as you have assessed him as an opponent, what sticks out to you?
You know, he's very quick. He's got some sharp hands. He's got some good movement. Pretty much, you know, like a lot of flyweights. I think it's going to be a fun fight, you know. If he stays there right in front of me, I think it's going to end up a little bit like Jeremy Stevens, Du Ho Choi, like last night. He lets me get a hold of him. I'm going to show you a little bit of Khabib Nurmagomedov style. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
When you are sitting down and you're watching fights when you're 5 days out from a fight, is it just get you amped up like, man, I can't wait for Friday night to get here?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm so involved with fighting right now. That's if I'm not fighting, training, you know, teaching, I'm watching fights. You know, I used to get excited about football games, that type of stuff. Now it's, you know, it's a good Saturday or Sunday when there's a UFC card on.
Now, when you're watching fights, obviously you are going to watch a fight much different than anyone else out there because this is what you do. What are you looking for when you're watching a fight for, you know, the common fight fan that's going to tune in, say, on Friday night or Saturday night with the UFC and Bellator card? What should they be looking for, you know, to kind of get what a fighter's thinking about when they're watching a fight?
You know, kind of how I fight. It's exciting. You know, it's exciting. I'm coming out. I'm going to stay on my feet. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to strike with you. I'm going to try to grapple. If I do get you down, I'm going to try to submit you, punish you, you know. I like exciting fights, somebody who's there to fight and not just to score points or, like I like to say, lay on top of somebody and hump them for 15 minutes, you know. Coming from a grappling background, you know, everyone always kind of, the grapplers get a bad name for doing that in the fight world, and that's something I want to stay completely away from. I hope that, you know, when I fight, you know, I'm never getting booed or I'm never laying on top of somebody dry humping them the whole time. You know, that's what I try to stay away from. And, you know, that's also what I look for when I'm watching fights. You know, who doesn't like an exciting fight?
See, I guess I'm a rarity. I don't mind grappling fights. Now, I mean, look, if there's a lack of action, obviously. But I think that, you know, there can be a very exciting fight on the ground.
Right, definitely.
But I do know there is a core fan base out there that they want to see you stand and bang. I mean, that's what they're looking to see. You know, when you're in a grappling position, let's just say you're dominating. Like, look at Sunday night, Kamaru Usman, absolutely dominating Emil Meek, but the crowd obviously hating what's going on. As a competitor, does that ever get in your mindset of like, I need to do something to make these fans happy? Or is the mindset, look, at the end of the day, I got to go in there and do what I need to do to get the win?
Right. And, you know, you never know what position a guy's in, you know, how he's feeling, what's going on with the person in the fight. But, you know, no matter the circumstance, you know, laying on top of somebody, just trying to survive and win. You know, I could see maybe like to steal a round, you know, maybe third period. It's been a close couple rounds, you know, that's when I'm going to use my grappling and be cautious with it, take you down and you know, kind of hold you down to secure a round. You know, I thought the Usman fight was good. You know, he had some good pressure. I thought he could have opened up a little bit more on the ground and pound, but, you know, it wasn't a very exciting fight to watch, you know. I thought there were some good grappling exchanges and stuff. You know, coming from a high-level grappling background, I saw a lot of good stuff, but, you know, you watch, like I said, Khabib Nurmagomedov do the same exact thing to people, except, you know, he hurts him when he gets him down there. You know, no disrespect to Usman or anything, but I thought he could have gave a little bit more.
With this being fight week and it being a catchweight of 130 pounds, how much easier is this week in comparison to if he had to cut those additional 5 pounds?
Oh, it's great, man. You know, when I originally put my name out there at this LFA one, I wanted to fight at bantamweight. And just kind of move up, not focus on the weight cut at all that stuff. And went through a lot of bantamweights that were looking for a fight until they got my name. And then about like a week or two ago, Latchman took the fight. And, you know, at that point, you know, I didn't really want to make flyweight. So it was like, let's meet at 30, you know, the catch weight.
Could you see yourself eventually going up to 135 as you get older?
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, I wouldn't mind cleaning out the 25 division and then seeing what's in store for me at 35. You know, I've been cutting weight for a long time. It's definitely my least favorite part about fighting. But it's part of the game, you know, something that I'm good at and, you know, people use to their advantage.
And, of course, everyone's going to see your fight come up here on Friday night, LFA 31 live on Access TV. How do you get the victory on Friday night?
I go out there and, you know, stay sharp on my feet. If I don't finish him there, I drag him to the ground and I pummel him until he stops moving. And they're going to need two refs to pull me off after this, after the last few decisions I've had.
And, of course, I, as always, man, I appreciate time. And let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, for sure, man. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me. And you guys can follow me at CKMMA125 on Twitter and Instagram. And then you can follow me at Casey Kenny on Facebook.
All right, that was my conversation with Casey Kenny. Of course, as always, I do appreciate Casey giving me some time to talk about what is going on with him. And, of course, that'll be on Friday night, LFA 31. But, Daniel, there's some other things going on in mixed martial arts we got to mention. As the recording of this podcast, reportedly, Khabib, Tony are going to fight for the lightweight title in Brooklyn, UFC 223. Apparently, Conor looks like he's going to be stripped of the title, which is something Dana alluded to on Sunday. You know, and I think for Tony taking this fight, probably, I think that must be a clear sign that Tony knows that Conor's not coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, as big as that payday is, the idea of Tony Ferguson not fighting until September of next year, which is what it looks like when Conor wanted to fight, I just don't think that jives with what his outlook in life is.
Or September this year.
September this year.
Here you go with that 2017, 2018 thing. Yeah.
But, dude, think about it, bro. It was just September, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. But, okay, you know when that fight would happen? The next time the Texans play – the next time the Buccaneers play a football game that's a regular season game. Yeah. The next – that Ferguson-McGregor fight would hypothetically happen week one or week two of the NFL season next year. This year. Damn it. So I can't blame a guy who is 33 years old – who's literally like achieved basically all his dreams, who appears to be such a great fighter and a guy who loves it, El Kakui, not wanting to fight sooner. And also, he's going to fight to be named the best fighter in the world. The difference is reputation versus money. And he's going to make a lot less money. But to me, man, Ferguson and Nurmagomedov is a money fight. Not a big-time money fight, but a much bigger money fight than I would have imagined if you told me those two were fighting 2 or 3 years ago.
Hey, man, absolutely love that fight. I mean, dude, who doesn't love that fight?
Because I don't know how to pick that fight. And to me, that's what's exciting about the main event we're going to have this weekend. It's kind of similar. Neither guy is a huge name, but the fight itself represents a phenomenal conflict I can't wait to see play out.
Speaking of UFC 223, also reportedly adds that fight card, Paul Felder versus Ale Quinta. And, of course, I mentioned a little earlier, Herrig and Kolbukevich.
Paul Felder and
Ale Quinta.
I'm sorry, Al. No, dude, Al's going to literally kill me for mispronouncing. That is going to be – first off, that's really sad that Paul Felder won't be doing commentary for that one because I loved him on the fight night. I thought that was a good commentary duo.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's that guy's name? Brendan what?
Brendan Fitzgerald.
Dude is awesome. Dude just knows his role. He's really good. Paul Felder's really good. Felder and Al could theoretically cut some great promos against one another. I mean, Al is a madman, and Paul Felder has all this experience talking in front of a microphone, so it's a pretty good fight.
Yeah, look forward to that fight. A story I saw on Tuesday that I absolutely loved. Yoel Romero has filed a lawsuit against a supplement company that led to his failed drug test. Love seeing that. If you're going to go with a tainted supplement defense, man, you should back it up with a lawsuit.
Put your money where your mouth is. It's similar to, okay, it's like this when it comes to doing the tainted supplement defense. If someone cancels plans with you or ends a relationship or quits a job or is late for a job because, and I learned this from Catfish, the TV show Catfish, because of either cancer or a car crash, they're probably lying to you. Cancer or car crash. It's always the excuse. tainted supplement, same thing. As always, the excuse, tainted supplement, whatever. So put your money where your mouth is. Sue the tainted supplement person. And with that being said, still don't necessarily believe Yoel Romero, because he's quite literally one of the most impressive and scariest physical human beings I've ever seen step foot in the cage. But if he can prove it right and at least make some money out of it, he may not get his reputation back per se, but he can certainly get a little bit more in his wallet.
Last week on the podcast, we talked about the UFC 221 lineup. And speaking of Romero, he's now fighting at UFC 221. He's going to fight Luke Rockhold for the interim and middleweight title as Robert Whittaker is out, which it sounds like he's got some pretty serious injuries.
And it sounds like a combination of many. And I'm looking forward to Rockhold Romero. It's a great fight. It's really a shame that we won't see Robert Whittaker make that walk out to Perth. I think it's real hard to turn around and put him right back in Australia. And so it just seems like a missed opportunity. But Romero and Rockhold is going to be a great fight. It's going to be interesting to see which fighter the fans acclimate towards, but hopefully Whittaker can get healthy, and this fight card needs Rockhold Romero to go on, because by God, if one of these two guys pull out, this fight card should not be on pay-per-view. I mean, this is an awful main card, bad one.
Yeah, if they don't make it to it, you might as well just make it a fight night card.
They're asking people to spend $50, $60 on one fight. That's it. It's a great fight.
Look, you're going to spend $60 for UFC 220 on Saturday, and you got to spend the exact same price for UFC 221.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, nothing will make you feel better about the card than looking towards the next one.
Yeah. Also, should note, a fight outside of the UFC and Bellator. CES is going to have a heavyweight title fight coming up here in February. Greg Rapella against Travis View. Of course, some people may remember Travis from his time in Bellator. He has got, I want to say, close to 100 fights. I was talking to somebody very close to him because I asked him, I said, hey, he hasn't fought, since the end of 2016. They said, yeah, he's been kind of concentrating on some other things, but that'll be for CES. Of course, that fight card is supposed to be headlined by Matt Bissett, but of course, now Matt's in the UFC. You know, one of those kind of feel-good stories heading into Saturday's UFC 220 is Matt Bissett. You know, he wrote on his Facebook page that, you know, basically if, you know, this call did not come, that, you know, potentially his next fight was going to be his last one. But he gets this opportunity, and you know, one of those good feel-good stories that I'm looking forward to on Saturday, UFC 220. How are you going to watch all these fights?
I'm going to watch these fights, absolutely. And I'm probably going to do this for the next few pay-per-views just because I cannot spend $60 on this. I gotta spend, you know, a little bit on a cover charge and the rest on wings, man. I'm gonna watch it with some buddies at Buffalo Wild Wings, man. That's how I'm gonna watch it. I may bring a notepad out, so I'm gonna eat all my wings before the main card. But
here would be the question mark. And I would love to hear our listeners kind of respond to us after the fact, especially if you go out to watch the fights. Do you have to ask to put the Bellator fights on?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm probably gonna do that. I think so. I think at Buffalo Wild Wings, I might.
I can tell you for the sports bar I do marketing for, we've also got the Showtime Boxing. So we've already started promoting that we're having all three. But that would be very interesting. You know, if you walk into a place on Saturday night, do you have to ask to have the Bellator fights put on?
I think you're more places than I know.
And if you do, that's got to be eye-opening to anyone who is employed by Bellator.
Yeah, it's up to Bellator to notify all those chain restaurants that they got a fight card on, and that fight card features Rampage and Sonnen.
Look, if this would be my advice to them, if they're listening, I'd hop open that UFC bar app. I'd find every sports bar that is showing UFC 220, and I'd be calling every single one of those places.
Yeah, that sucks for whatever intern has to do that, but that's what you got to do, because there's going to be a lot of eyeballs in the UFC card. You can put your product on, and it's a much easier sell to say watch Rampage Sonnen than McDonald Lima, and that's what they did, naming that the main event.
But of course, looking forward to these fights on Saturday night, UFC 220 and Bellator 192. Do want to thank Michael Chandler, Aaron Pico, and Casey Kinney, all coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Coming up next week, we'll be talking to Frank Camacho, who's going to be fighting next Saturday night at UFC on Fox 27. Also, Going to be joined by J.D. DiMaggio, who is a training partner of Dustin Poirier. He's going to be fighting next weekend in Louisiana, so we'll talk to him as well. Of course, we'll recap what happened with all these fights taking place on Saturday. And of course, then we'll start to look ahead to Bellator 193 and UFC on Fox 27. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which is here every week on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.